All right, the recorder's underway. We'll be picking it up on page 696. 696. That's a thick outline you have, don't you? 696. And we'll be picking it up on chapter 47, verse 21. All right, where were we last week? We went over the basic views of the borders of the Messianic Kingdom. I brought out the fact that there's the conventional view with a heavy dependence on chapter 47 of Ezekiel. I also mentioned the minimalist view that has a heavy dependence on Numbers 34. And both of those views are seen in the English Study Version, English Study Bible, English Standard Version. There we go. I think that's it, right? English Standard Version. There's so many versions out these days. English Standard Version Study Bible. The green, of course, is the conventional view that most commentaries hold. And the minimalist view, the Numbers 34 view, is this red line here, approximately. So we went. I also introduced you to the maximalist view, which has a heavy dependence on imagination. And there was a great variety of those views. There's one view of Greater Israel. Here's another view of Greater Israel. All right, then we went through the material in the scripture on the border, and we saw that it was pretty difficult to determine, especially the northern border of the land during the Messianic Kingdom. So I tried to answer the question, what in the world are the boundaries of the Promised Land? And the approach I took was to integrate a lot more material than simply Ezekiel 47 or Numbers 34. So some of the, I gave you a preview. I said that I believe the land will expand into something like this, that the land of Israel in the Messianic Kingdom will look something like this. Now, how did I get to that position? Well, I'll go over some of the major sections of Scripture that talk about that. One was Genesis 15:18, where Abraham is told the basic boundaries of the land, also repeated in Exodus 23:31. First of all, the promised land for you, Abraham, will go from the river of Egypt as far as the great river, the river Euphrates. So where's the river of Egypt? Some feel it is the eastern border of Egypt, but that won't work. That means we would have entered the promised land as soon as we crossed that area. We did not enter the promised land then. Others feel that the river of Egypt is the eastern branch of the Nile, but again, that won't work because then a whole bunch of Egypt as well as the Sinai Peninsula would be part of the promised land. The best candidate is the Wadi al-Arish, approximately in this area here. So the border has to go from the Wadi al-Arish to the Euphrates. And remember, there's many, many references to the Euphrates River. Now, where? Do we hit the Euphrates River and stop here? Or do we go up the Euphrates somewhere, all the way up here? Where along the Euphrates does the border run? So I tried to determine that. All right, another key section of Scripture is Genesis 15. Again, God is talking to Abraham and telling him about the peoples that will be dispossessed when the Jewish people come into the land. And verse 19 said, the Kenite and the Kenizzite and the Kadmonite, and the Kenites lived down in this area, and the Kenizzites lived in this area, and Kadmonites just means the Easterners. We really don't know where they lived, kind of a general term. Verse 20, we would receive the land of the Hittite and the Perizzite and the Rephaim. Well, the Hittites, we know that they had a huge empire up in Turkey and that it slopped over into the western arm of the Fertile Crescent. So we've got to account for Hittite territory somehow. That would push our border way up. Some commentators think that the Hittites had an enclave down here. That's possible, but we sure know they had a huge empire up there. So the best bet for Hittite country would be up near Turkey. The Perizzite, we don't know where they live. That just means villagers, the villagers of some sort. The Rephaim lived in this area. Verse 21, the Amorite and the Canaanite and the Girgashite and the Jebusite. The Amorites lived down here. there's a big gap there, so I just dumped in the word Canaanites there because Canaanite is simply a generic term for the many, many tribes that lived in that area. And the Girgashites, we have no idea where they are located, but we do know that the Jebusites lived in Jerusalem. So by looking at these, the locations where these people lived, we begin to get a general idea of where the land borders would be. Isaiah 11:14 gave us a little more interesting information. Speaking of Israel and Judah, they will sweep down upon the slopes of the Philistines on the west. Well, this is the Philistine plain right here on the west. So Israel and Judah will retake that area in the context of the tribulation and the beginning of the kingdom. So that will become Jewish territory. Most of it is Jewish territory today, but the Gaza Strip is not. Then, together they will plunder the sons of the east. They will possess Edom and Moab, and the sons of Ammon will be subject to them. So here's the sons of the east, these three people groups. So Edom will become Jewish territory. Now Moab, we know from the prophet Ezekiel, will be an identifiable country in the kingdom. So this area here will come under Jewish sovereignty at least. Ammon will also be an identifiable country in the kingdom. So that area will come under Jewish sovereignty at a minimum. So the border would have to look something like this. The red line indicating the formal borders of the Promised Land, the dotted line recognizing the existence of the subject states, Moab and Ammon. Unless Moab and Ammon are reconstituted to the east. If they're reconstituted out here somewhere, then this would be the formal border of the nation as well. We'll see exactly how it works out. Yes?
Bob, can we deduce from this that the Easterners mentioned earlier, or are these?
The Easterners? No, it's just a general term.
Oh,
yeah, we have no idea. Nobody has any idea who those are referring to. All right. Now, I explained to you why I did not accept the minimalist view or the conventional view, and you have the slides with the reasons. I also explained why I didn't accept the maximalist view. And basically, these two views don't take in enough data. So when we got all finished going through the data, this is what I feel the boundaries of the Promised Land would look like. And in review, the Wadi al-Arish to the Red Sea, from sea to sea. There's that idea, from sea to sea. From the Red Sea to Gilead, including Mount Seir, this area here. Here's Mount Seir. Then Gilead and Bashan. Gilead and Bashan are right here, up the wilderness to the Euphrates River. This is the wilderness, the Syrian desert and the Arabian desert. Now, the border is kind of vague there, and I suppose if you are an inhabitant of this area, this territory, you would be able to tell me the wilderness starts here. But the Fertile Crescent brings in moist Mediterranean air in this direction, in an easterly direction from the Mediterranean. Eventually that air dries out, runs out of moisture, and the desert begins somewhere in this area. So this is the Fertile Crescent here, and anything on the eastern side would be the wilderness. And again, it isn't a very precise border, unless of course perhaps people who live there know exactly what it is. But God is telling Ezekiel about borders that Ezekiel would be familiar with, that the people who read this material way back in Ezekiel's day would understand and be familiar with. So there is some rationale to saying, well, we need to take a look at that data seriously. All righty, so anyway, Gilead to Bashan, up the wilderness to the Euphrates River. Now, how far up the Euphrates? Along the Euphrates to the northern corner, which is this area here where it curves back to the east, which includes Hittite country, a portion of Hittite country, and then over to the Mediterranean Sea. So we include Hittite country and the Euphrates in the boundaries there. So for me, that's the boundaries of the land, and that's the map we're going to use. You don't have to like it. You don't have to accept it. But you do have to write me a 10-page paper, right? All right. Now, how do I harmonize all this data, the minimalist view, the conventional view, and Bob's view into a coherent whole? Well, the principle you should always use with Scripture is harmonization. Don't use the modern Western either-or mindset. Either this is right, therefore that is wrong. Use the biblical, Near Eastern, both-and mindset. In other words, harmonize all the data. Bring all the data together and get a complete view. That's what systematic theology does. It brings all the data on a subject together so you get a complete view, a more complete view of the topic, whether it be harmartiology, the study of sin, or ecclesiology, the study of the church, or anything. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to harmonize all the data, and we're going to harmonize it under the principle that expansion of territory, or blessing, in other words, is based upon faithful obedience. We see this principle operate in the past with the nation of Israel. In this map, we see Saul's kingdom. When Saul was faithful to the Lord, his territory expanded and expanded to that much. Saul didn't stay faithful all that long. Well, following him was David. And faithful David was blessed with an expansion of territory to the south and to the north. Then came his son Solomon. And Solomon was faithful at the beginning of his reign, and his territory expanded all the way up to, guess what? The Euphrates. Now, Jewish people didn't occupy this yellow area here. It was under Solomon's economic control. But then Solomon waffled in his faithfulness as well. So we see the principle that expansion is based on faithful obedience very clearly in the past. So what will happen with the nation Israel? I'm going to present to you the idea that during the tribulation period, the modern state of Israel will collapse. The Antichrist will take Jerusalem. The Jewish people will be on the run, kicked out of the land. The most important group of Jewish people, probably the leadership, holed up in Petra or Basra. The rest of us scattered all over the world for the tribulation holocaust, the tribulation diaspora. That'll last 3.5 years. Yeshua will return at the end of the 3.5 years, rescue the nation, and reinstitute the nation and institute the Messianic kingdom. It's quite possible, based on the principle of obedience means blessing, that the nation could be reinstituted around the Numbers 34 borders, the minimalist view. Then, as more and more Jewish people are born to the land, and God has said he will increase the population, as the population increases, then the land can begin to swell to the borders of Ezekiel 47. And then as the years pass, the nation can expand to its furthest promised extent. Okay? So there's the map we'll use for the rest of the class. Does that make sense? Any questions? All right. Quick review of where we were. All righty. We're now at point three, page 696. Point three is in the middle of the page, the division of the land. We now begin to divide up the land among the tribes of Israel. Now, before the land is divided up, God lays down a couple of basic principles. And we'll finish up chapter 47 by looking at these some basic principles that are being laid down. Basically, he says, we're going to divide the land up among two groups of people. And point 3a is your first group for the tribes of Israel. This is verse 21. The land will be divided up among the tribes of Israel, verse 21. You shall divide this land among yourselves according to the tribes of Israel. Now, what land? Uganda? Those of you who know Jewish history and the history of Zionism know why I say Uganda. That was proposed as a Jewish state at one time. Herzl was in favor of it. Yeah, Herzl was in favor of it. Herzl didn't care. He just wanted a Jewish state where Jews would be free from anti-Semitism. Okay? How about Al-Arish in northern Egypt? That didn't fly either. How about Europe? How about South America? This land, he says. What land is he talking about? The promised land. The land we call Israel today, although we only occupy maybe 30% of it today. You shall divide up this land, not Uganda, not Al-Arish, not South America, no other place, this land. Now, you'll divide it up according to the tribes of Israel. That'll be explained in the next chapter. So that's the first principle. You'll divide the land up among the tribes of Israel. But point B, the middle of the page there, but also you'll divide up the land for the stranger. And that's a reference to Gentile people. So there will be some Gentiles living in the promised land. In verse 22, the position of the Gentile is described. Verse 22. It shall come about that you shall divide it by lot for an inheritance among yourselves and among the aliens who stay in your midst, who bring forth sons in your midst. They shall be to you as the native born among the sons of Israel. They shall be allotted an inheritance with you among the tribes of Israel. Okay, point A1. We're going to cast the lot. And point A, right parentheses, 1. The lot is not, notice, not for tribal divisions, as it was in the book of Joshua. Remember the book of Joshua? The land was divided up among the tribes. But this lot is not for the tribal divisions, because those divisions are already determined. And so this lot will be for individual inheritance, family plots within each tribal territory. So it'll be for you, the Jews. So this will be Jewish family territory. What family receives what part of their tribe, their tribal area? All right, so that's the first principle then. Now, page 697. Verse 22 also states at the top of page 697, Roman numeral 3, that this lot will be for the strangers. We'll also cast the lot for Gentiles. So this will be Gentile family territory as well. And notice point A, it'll be for Gentiles that sojourn among you. So parentheses 1, they live with the Jews and they experience permanent residency. And how do we know they experience permanent residency? Because they're begetting children among you. They're settled down in the land, they're building families. Now, is this pure Gentile families? Maybe. We don't know. These might be survivors of the tribulation period. These may be tribulation saints who live in the promised land. These may be Gentiles who are intermarried with Jewish spouses. Jewish intermarriage is quite common today in America. It's 50%. And I'm one of them. My wife is a wild olive branch. Okay? So it's possible it could be Jewish men or women with Gentile spouses. So we'll see. We'll see when we get there. Their status. They'll have equal rights. Point C, open parentheses, number 1 there. They'll have equal rights as under the law. And you see the Mosaic system, Leviticus 19, 24, and 15 as your cross-references. But they will also have rights that are a little more extensive than the Mosaic system. Look at Roman numeral number 2. They shall have inheritance with you among the tribe of Israel. This is one right that Gentiles did not have. Under the Mosaic law, they could not own property. So this is another something that's different from the Mosaic law. But the condition for permanent ownership of some land in a tribal division is permanent residency. And we don't know what the visa requirements are to get that permanent residency.
Hi, I'm from Goyamville.
I'm from Goyamville, yeah. But they will be living in the land. So point B at the bottom sums it up. There'll be a select group of Gentiles in the land during the Messianic Kingdom. But again, what the criteria is for selecting these Gentiles and exactly how many, we don't know. The details aren't laid out here. Page 698. The identity of the Gentiles in the land. Verse 23. And it will come about that in the tribe with which the alien stays, there you shall give him his inheritance, declares the Lord God. So point B sums this verse up. He will have his own land within the tribe that he has either chosen to identify with, and we're not sure. He may just say, well, you know, I kind of like Reuben. I like the territory in the tribe of Reuben. I'd like to settle down there. Maybe somebody will say, well, I like Gad way to the south, so I'll settle down there. We don't know. So he'll either choose a tribe to be identified with, or he'll be intermarried with a tribe. You know, the husband may be from Reuben, so the wife will go along and she'll be from Reuben as well. We'll see. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens when we get to the kingdom. But the land will not be exclusively for Jewish people. All right, make sense? Question? We're going to get to that in just a moment. Yeah. Question.
I see the promise being resurrected to share the kingdom. Mm-hmm. What about Gentile believers like Uriah, Hittite, Rahab, these kind of things?
Well, the territory of the kingdom is promised to the Jewish people. This territory is promised to the Jewish people, okay? The rest of the world will be for the Gentile people, and the rest of the world will be experiencing kingdom blessings as well. Okay? Sure. Tribulation saints, those who've died during the tribulation, they'll be resurrected. They'll be populating the kingdom. They won't necessarily be populating this sliver of land, but they'll be populating the kingdom, the world, yeah. And the church saints, you and others here, everyone else in this room, will be in your glorified body, so you'll be co-reigning around the world. Maybe you'll be the, where do you live? Compton. Yeah, you're going to be the mayor of Compton, okay? Something like that. Yeah. God's going to appoint you that. I can see right now, yeah. All right, okay, so.
I wonder if there'll be linguistic distinctions. I tend to think not personally.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't say. Yeah.
Historically, where one language ends and another begins is the border of a country.
Yeah, true, exactly.
So proposal, then linguistically you're speaking Hebrew, I assume.
Of course.
In that particular geographical area. So when the language, when the Hebrew language stops at a particular geographical border and another language is spoken, that demarks the boundaries of one country to another.
Mm-hmm. Many times, yeah. Many times languages makes a difference, yeah.
But I don't know if you assume that in this context here, if it's just geographical or if it's linguistic
and
ethnic.
Yeah, I can't tell you. That's an open question. I don't think there's any data that refers to it. The division of languages happened long after the fall. And so since we'll be returning to Edenic conditions, it's possible that Hebrew could be the national language of the planet. But since we're dealing with natural people, the tribulation saints entering the kingdom in natural bodies, that also speaks for having language differences too. So we'll just have to see. I don't know of anything that definitively would state that. Well, that's a possibility, sure. We'll just have to see, basically. We'll just have to see. You guys better get ready with your Hebrew, though, because you're going to have to come to... You're going to have to come to the Promised Land for the Feast of Tabernacles. So you're going to have to speak Hebrew anyway. Sorry.
Yeah, I see you really regret it.
Well, you see, I'm very jealous of Josh. You know, Josh speaks better Hebrew than me now. I taught him basic Hebrew. Now he speaks a lot better than me. So, you know, I'm jealous of the kid.
Are you?
Yeah. All right, we're now getting into chapter 48. Okay, chapter 48, page 698, middle of the page, point 4. Now we begin to look at the division of the land that's been set up for the tribes themselves. Now there is a kind of an idealistic, idealized diagram on page 713. So if you turn to page 713, you could refer to that during the next section. But again, this is kind of an idealized diagram, very simple, and a basic diagram of the data we're going to have here. All righty. Well, let's begin with the northern border, chapter 48. Chapter 48, verse 1. Now these are the names of the tribes. From the northern extremity, beside the way of Hethlon to Libo Hamat, as far as Hazar Enan at the border of Damascus, toward the north side beside Hamat, running from east to west. Okay, here's the first part of the verse. Now there's a kind of a summary of this material at the bottom of page 698. Point A. All tribal portions extend across the whole breadth of the land from the eastern border to the western border, and of course the western border being the Mediterranean. So we'll see that there'll be 12 parallel portions running east to west. Now I'm not very comfortable with point C. Each tribe has an equal breadth running north and south. Now this statement is probably based on chapter 47, verse 14. But I don't think it can be accurate unless the land is a rectangle or a square, like page 713. If you look at page 713, that idealized drawing, you can have equal portions running north to south, but the boundary of the land doesn't look like that by any way, shape, or form. So we'll have to see what it's like, but I'm not comfortable with point C. Also, point D, I'm not comfortable with this statement. All tribes are west of the Jordan River. I see no reason for that statement, unless it's based on Numbers 34, a minimalist viewpoint. Now, I don't know which viewpoint Arnold takes, Dr. Fruchtenbaum takes. He seems to take a minimalist viewpoint here based on point D, but if you look in his book, in Footsteps of the Messiah, you will get a map of Israel and the Messianic Kingdom, and look at the map of Israel. It is the conventional border, right? That's the conventional view. And under the conventional view, these northern tribes are to the east of the Jordan River. You know, so all the tribes do not lie to the west of the Jordan River. So I don't know which position Arnold takes for sure, but I'm not comfortable with the point C or D. Okay, does that make sense? Question. The only tribe that's identifiable today is the tribe of Levi. That's the only tribe. The rest of us are B'nai Yisrael, the sons of Israel. Okay? So God knows which tribe I'm part of, but I don't.
But then how could it all come back? It almost seems like this has already happened, even though I know it hasn't.
Well, that's the point, is God knows who belongs to what tribe. There's some advantages to omniscience. You know?
Okay.
So God knows what tribe I belong to, but I don't. People ask in the morning class, well, how will you know, Bob? I said, well, I'll go for a name tag. Hi, I'm Bob. I belong to Reuben, you know? Something like that, you know?
If God ever knew, he always knew.
Yeah, yeah, he always knew, sure.
So he's not going to be confused at that time.
No. Yeah, no problem. He knows exactly where. Now, I might be, but... Yeah. So look for my name tag, okay? One more question. Every Jewish person does belong to a tribe. Every Jewish person does belong to a tribe. We may not know what tribe we belong to today, but each one is associated with a tribe. Not to worry. In the kingdom, you'll be happy with it. You'll be very happy to be part of your tribe. All right. Yeah. All right, let me finish up the page here, and you'll have your break. Okay, point E. The holy oblation is in place of the Levitical cities. That's different from the Mosaic system. In the Mosaic system, the Levitical cities were scattered throughout the land of Israel. But here, the Levitical cities will be located on Millennial Mount Zion. And then note the proximity of each tribe in relation to the holy oblation. The sons of Rachel and Leah are closest to Millennial Mount Zion. Rachel and Leah are the primary wives of Jacob, the matriarchs. And they had two handmaids that contributed to the tribes of Israel, Bilhah of Rachel and Zilpah of Leah. But they are the secondary wives, and so those related to them will be further from the holy oblation. All right, with that in mind, let's take our break, and we'll pick it up after the break on page 699. All right, we're underway again. All right, we'll pick it up with the divisions as they're laid out. All right, at the top of page 699. Boy, almost 700 pages, you guys, huh? Big outline. Finishing up verse, first part of verse 1, the border is then detailed, and it's just a repeat of chapter 47, verses 15 through 17. Point 3, again, the statement is made in your outline. They'll have their sides east and west, 12 parallel portions running east and west, but equal breadth north and south. And again, I don't think that'll work unless the land is some kind of a perfect rectangle, perfect square, something like that. All right, second part of verse 1, we begin to look at the tribes as they're laid out. We start with Dan in the second part of verse 1, very simple phrase, Dan, one portion. And you see that point 2, Dan was the son of Bilhah. She's a handmaid of Rachel. And so this is the northern border of the land. So here's our map of the land of Israel. And Dan is way up there at the northern border. The northernmost tribe. Verse 2, Asher. Beside the border of Dan, from the east side to the west side, Asher, one portion. And again, we see that he is a son of Zilpah, one of the handmaids of Leah. So we stick in Asher next. Just drop him in there somewhere. Parallel portions running east to west. Verse 3, Naphtali. Beside the border of Asher, from the east side to the west side, Naphtali, one portion. At the bottom of the page, you see that he is a son of Bilhah, a handmaid of Rachel. So we drop in Naphtali here. So there's our first three tribes on page 699. And again, this is being duplicated on page 713. You can see that if you want to turn there. Page 700. You are now all part of the 700 club. Manasseh, verse 4. Beside the border of Naphtali from east, from the east side to the west side, Manasseh, one portion. Now notice point 2. This is a son of Joseph. There is no tribe of Joseph laid out here, but we do have a tribe for one of his sons, Manasseh. So grandson of Rachel. So Manasseh comes in next, right in this area. South of him, Ephraim in verse 5. Beside the border of Manasseh, from the east side to the west side, Ephraim, one portion. Also a son of Joseph. Again, no tribe of Joseph. So we stick in Ephraim here. They will represent Joseph and his double blessing. Verse 6, Reuben. Beside the border of Ephraim, from the east side to the west side, Reuben, one portion. Now notice at the bottom of the page, point 2. He's the son of Leah. She was a primary wife. She was a matriarch, not a handmaid. And he was the firstborn of Jacob. And he was entitled to the double blessing of the firstborn, but he lost his inheritance through immorality. 1 Chronicles 5:1. So Reuben, of course, is still there, but he has lost out on his blessings. And, you know, that's a good application for us as well. You know, we will be in the kingdom just as Reuben is in the kingdom, right? When we're believers, our eternal destiny is secure. You know, just like Reuben is there. But Reuben has lost out on his rewards. Reuben has lost out on his blessing through disobedience. And the same is true for us. If we walk in disobedience toward the Lord, yeah, you're not going to lose your salvation, but you're going to lose your rewards. You're going to lose your blessing. You'll be there, but it won't be what you could have had if you lived in obedience. Okay? Question?
Are the east
That's no guarantee that they're of the tribe. No, unfortunately, that's no guarantee at all. The only tribe we know of for sure today is Levi. Again, through, because the rabbis decreed that Levites would identify themselves through their name. For example, there's a well-known rabbi in the Jewish book world, Rabbi Chaim Halevi Donin. Chaim, the Levite, Donin. So he's identified as a Levite. And of course, we have the DNA swabs today too. We have the Levitical marker as well. That's the only way we know. Names are no guarantee of anything. Okay. All right, Reuben in the kingdom, but not at the place of blessing that he could have had. Page 701, top of the page, Judah, verse 7. Beside the border of Reuben, from the east side to the west side, Judah, one portion. And this is another, point two here, this is another son of Leah, a matriarch. But not only is he a son of Leah, one of the major wives of Jacob, primary wife, but he holds the Messianic line. Through Judah comes the Messianic line, and Judah was the tribe of David and the tribe that remained loyal to David no matter what. And so Judah will sit in here closest to the Holy Oblation, to Millennial Mount Zion, on the north side, closest to Mount Zion. And then the Holy Oblation or Millennial Mount Zion now comes into view as we get to verse 8. As we move south, we come to verse 8. And beside the border of Judah, from the east side to the west side, shall be the allotment by which you shall set apart 25,000 in width and in length, like one of the portions, from the east side to the west side, and the sanctuary shall be in the middle of it. All right, now we're referring to Millennial Mount Zion, so we've just stuck that in right here. We know that Jerusalem has to stay in its place, so we have to keep Millennial Mount Zion down in this area, so Jerusalem will stay basically in its place. Now, point three deals with the measurements. And did you notice, if you have an NASB, the NASB inserts the measure cubits, but it inserts it in italic, recognizing that there's no word there for it. Their footnote then states that reeds are the other option of measure. So because there is no word there, and because we determined that the longer measure was reeds in chapter 42, verse 15 through 20, we're using the longer measure of reeds. So the breadth of the Millennial Mount Zion is exactly the same as we've looked at, 50 miles by 50 miles, 25,000 reeds by 25,000 reeds. So that's the point A and B at the bottom of page 701. So we're looking at the Holy Oblation here. Now, page 702. Point four, at the top of the page, says the sanctuary shall be in the midst of it. It, of course, is a reference to the Holy Oblation. So it'll be located within the Holy Oblation, but we've learned from the past that it is located in the northern section of the Holy Oblation, and that will be reiterated again in just a moment. So the temple is sitting in the middle of the northern section. Now, as we continue south, we now bump into that northern section and begin to look at it. That northern section is described in verses 9 through 12. We start with verse 9. The allotment that you shall set apart to the Lord shall be 25,000 in length and 10,000 in width. Okay, so as we look on the map, we are 25,000 in width. That's 50 miles. And 10,000 in height, that's 20 miles. So we have the northern section, 10 miles by 20 miles, as we saw in the previous material. Again, reeds, not cubits. And point C, it's stated as being unto the Lord or unto Jehovah. That's because the temple lies in the midst of it. Now, what's the purpose for this northern section? two purposes are brought out in verse 10, chapter 48, verse 10. The holy allotment shall be for these, namely for the priests, toward the north, 25,000, toward the west, 10,000 in width, toward the east, 10,000 in width, toward the south, 25,000 in length, and the sanctuary of the Lord shall be in its midst. So purpose number one is laid out. This northern section is for the priests. This is where the sons of Zadok will live. We already discovered that. And the dimensions are restated for us again very clearly. 50 miles across the northern border, 20 miles the western border, 20 miles the eastern border, and then as we get to the southern border, 50 miles again. And the purpose, very important purpose, point B at the bottom of the page, the sanctuary will be in the midst. So the temple, as you see up here on the diagram, the temple will sit in the middle of this northern section. That's the purpose for it. Now, some commentators place the temple in the middle of the central section. As you look at diagrams of this material, some diagrams will look like this. The temple will be down here. Now, I feel that our position is better for three reasons. First of all, from the perspective of context, we're moving consistently from north to south. We started up with Dan in the northern border. We moved down to the Holy Oblation. Now we're moving through the Holy Oblation, north to south. So the context fits dealing with the northern section first. So the temple would stay in the northern section. Secondly, I think it's better from the perspective of the Millennial River. In this view, the Millennial River does not bless the tribe of Levi up here. The Millennial River does not flow through the northern section, so it's not blessed by the river. Our view does put the river flowing through all sections of Millennial Mount Zion. And so I think it's a better view. And thirdly, this will be better from the perspective of increasing sanctity, as we'll see in the upcoming verses. As we go from north to south, the sanctity will decrease. Most sacred up here, less sacred here, common area here. So again, the whole pattern is from north to south and fits better that way. But you will see diagrams like this. Here's the English Standard Version Study Bible. I blew up that map that I showed you earlier, and here is the Holy Oblation, Millennial Mount Zion, and where do they have the temple? They have it in the middle of the central section. So again, I don't feel that's the best place to put it. But again, don't be surprised when you see that. Okay, does that all make sense? So we'll go back to our diagram here. All right, page 703. Top of the page, point three. Verses 11 through 12, we see again that this is the possession of the sons of Zadok, the Levitical priests from the tribe of Zadok. Verse 11. It shall be for the priests who are sanctified from the sons of Zadok, who have kept my charge, who did not go astray when the sons of Israel went astray, as the Levites went astray. Now, as we look at verse 11, there are two possible renderings of the Hebrew phrase there with listed by right parentheses A. That Hebrew phrase can be rendered in two ways with a different emphasis. Both of them happen to be true, so it's a toss-up. This may be one of those both and sections of Scripture, not an either or. Number one, you can read that phrase, it shall be for the priests that are sanctified. The emphasis would be on the priests being set aside for sacred use. Or point B, or the sanctified portion. There the emphasis is on the northern section of territory set aside for sacred use. Either rendering is accurate. So it's probably a both and situation. Now, why are either or the priests and the territory set aside and blessed? Point two, they have kept my charge. The sons of Zadok are blessed because of obedience. Their father, Zadok, remained loyal to David when everyone was turning against him. And so the basis for the blessing is the loyalty of the father, Zadok. Now, what will be the status of the priests of Zadok, the Zadokian priests? Their status comes out in the middle of the page in verse 12. It shall be an allotment to them from the allotment of the land, a most holy place by the border of the Levites. So we have two allotments talked about here, two oblations. The first oblation is the entire millennial Mount Zion. That's point A there. The oblation of the land, that's the allotment set aside from the entire land of Israel, the 50-mile by 50-mile millennial Mount Zion. But within that allotment is a smaller allotment, and that's the northern section for the priests of Zadok, 50 miles by 20 miles. So an allotment within an allotment. And this northern allotment is described as a thing most holy. Now we'll see that the central section is like the holy place, but here the northern section is like the Holy of Holies. This is the most sacred section of Millennial Mount Zion, the northern section. Okay? Make sense there? All right. Now let's move on to the next page in your outline, page 704. Page 704 says, by the border of the Levites, we already know point A, that the northern border was the tribe of Judah, but now we learn that the southern border is the tribe of Levi. And we already know that the tribe of Levi will be living in this central section. So here's our southern border of the northern territory. And now as we move south, again, we're consistently moving from north to south, we now get a look at that central section. And the measurements of the central section come out in verse 13. Alongside the border of the priests, the Levites shall have 25,000 in length and 10,000 in width. The whole length shall be 25,000 and the width 10,000. And again, I think all these measurements argue for literalness here, not for a symbolic rendering of this. Okay, point 1A, 1B, right, parentheses B. The Levites shall have it. The central portion shall be for the Levites. We have learned that already. And then drop down to double parentheses B at the bottom of the page. Again, the size is emphasized. Again, we have the 50-mile width and 20-mile breadth or height there. So 50 by 20 is the central section. All right, all make sense? Question.
I'm looking at the New American Standard Version. Specifically, I'm looking at verse that basically is ending in the phrase shall be in italics and then 25,000 cubits.
Mm-hmm.
Verse 13.
Verse 13. Mm-hmm. Yeah, alongside the border of the priests, the Levites, 25,000 in length, it shall read. It probably was just an editorial addition in order to make it as smooth as possible for the average reader. That's probably the reason why they put it in.
The reason I ask the question centers around what I'll call tents, because in the census, isn't it a done deal, so to speak? When it's expanded, this is the way it's going to be.
Right, sure. Yeah, well, that's just that's a translating team's decision, you know. And because, they decided for some reason to use those two words. I wasn't there, so I'm stuck with it. I don't know the philosophy behind that verse, so. Okay, we're at page 705, correct? Page 705, top of the page, verse 14. Three laws are laid out for the Levites living in this central section. Verse 14. Moreover, they shall not sell or exchange any of it, or alienate this choice portion of land, for it is holy to the Lord. So, okay, Levites, when the lot is thrown for you and you get your family plot, there's a few things you can't do. First of all, you shall not sell it. Don't sell your allotted home. Once you receive it, it's yours for the 1,000 years. So they can't sell their family plot. Secondly, point two, nor exchange it. In other words, no land swaps either. I can just see somebody saying, well, I can't sell it, but hey, can't we trade, buddy? You know, I like being over the edge, by the edge of Millennial Mount Zion. No, I'm sorry. You can't sell it, you can't trade it. What I allot to you is your territory. Contentment, be content with it. There's another application for us. Be content with what God gives us. In the book of, I forget which Timothy it is, Paul says, godliness with contentment is great gain. Dennis, do you have that? First or second Timothy. Godliness with contentment is great gain. We need to have a mindset that we are going to be content with what God sends our way. He may not send us great riches. He may not send us lots of grandchildren. He may not send us what? A wife, a husband, who knows? We need to choose to be content with what God sends us. And that's the idea here too. Don't sell it, don't exchange it, be content with the family plot that I lay out for you. Yes? Yeah, I can't say what happens generation after generation. You know, that's an unanswered question. The Lord will deal with that in a fair way, I'm sure. He'll maybe assign another plot. There may be territory left over, and as the Levites expand, then the new family units would receive new lots.
They would have timeshares.
Timeshares, there you go. There you go.
They'd lease it out.
Lease it out, yeah, okay. But he doesn't say anything against timeshares here. You're brilliant, Roger. Okay. Okay. Yes, question.
That godliness with contentment, scripture is 1 Timothy 6:6.
All right. 1 Timothy, thank you, 6:6. That's a verse that means a lot to me. You see, I had it memorized. I'm not a content person. I'm always thinking, yeah, let's have it better. Let's have it different. Okay?
I'm with you.
You're with me. Yeah, you understand the problem. All right. So we need to learn to be content. All righty. Point three, nor shall the first fruits of the land be alienated. And the idea here is that the first fruits belong to the Levites, as under the law, similar to the law. They will receive the offerings for their sustenance. So what's the reason for these three laws? Point B, the reason is that this territory is holy unto the Lord. The central section is like the holy place. It has less sanctity than the northern section. That's the Holy of Holies, so to speak. This is the holy place. Now, as we continue south, here's the holiest area, the Holy of Holies for the Millennial Mount Zion. Here's the holy place for Millennial Mount Zion. Now we move into that southern section. Moving north to south, the southern section comes into view, verse 15, first part of the verse. The remainder, 5,000 in width and 25,000 in length. So at the bottom of the page, we have the measurements. Again, we know them. 10 miles in breadth and 50 miles in width. That's that southern section. Okay, so we're very familiar with that. Page 706, top of the page. The purpose for the southern section. Second part of verse 15. The southern section shall be for common use, for the city, for dwellings, and for open spaces, and the city shall be in its midst. Common use. There we go. This is comparable to the outer court of the temple, the outer court of the tabernacle. So we have the common area, and we have the holy area, then we have the Holy of Holies, same pattern as in the temple. So increasing sanctity as you move north from Jerusalem. Of course, the city is Jerusalem, Point B. Point C, we'll have people living in the city, of course. Point D, there'll be suburbs. There'll be a strip of open land around the city. We'll look at that in just a second here. And then we learn that the city will be in the middle of the southern section, as I've diagrammed it here. Okay, so there's the purpose for the southern section, common use. Now, how big will millennial Jerusalem be? Verse 16. These shall be its measurements. The north side, 4,500. The south side, 4,500. The east side, 4,500. The west side, 4,500. And again, my NASB puts cubits there in italics. There's no need for them. The better measurement is reeds. So if we use reeds, we now have a city 8 3/4 miles, almost 9 miles square. You look at my diagram and what do I have here? 10 miles. Why do I have 10 miles there? Next page. All right. Top of page 707. The city is almost 9 miles cube, 9 miles, but the city will have suburbs. There'll be a strip of land around the city, a green belt. So verse 17 describes the suburbs or the green belt, or as the NASB puts it, an open space. The city shall have open spaces, one on the north, 250, on the south, 250, on the east, 250, on the west, 250. And again, it's reeds, no reason to go to cubits there as the NASB inserts. So we have an extra half mile around each side of the city. So if you bring all that together, you now have a city that's 10 miles, a cube, 10 miles on each side. So the entire breadth, point B1, 5,000 reeds, or 10 miles on each side. The city sitting inside it is 4,500 reeds. Okay, does that make sense? The New Jerusalem is 1,500 miles, a cube 1,500 miles long, wide, and high. This is quite a bit smaller, but it is a cube. It is a cube. That's similar. Okay. All righty. Now, notice at the bottom of the page there, B4, it says this open space will neither be built or planted. Well, probably not built up with buildings. I have no problem with that. And not planted with crops. That we'll see in just a few minutes. But I don't think we should extend that statement to the point of saying it's just going to be dirt. It's probably going to be landscaped. For those of you that play golf, it'll probably be a nice golf green all around the city there, you know, nice grassy area. How many play golf here? Well, a few of you will be happy. Okay. Now, that's just my speculation. I don't play golf.
The Jews will run the Homeowners Association.
Oh, there'll be a Homeowners Association run there? All righty. So we will have this green belt around the city, probably landscape, but it won't have crops, and it will not have buildings in it. So I've here's a chart of the millennial city, and I've added, this chart comes from Footsteps of the Messiah by Arnold, Dr. Fruchtenbaum, and I've added that dotted line to account for the suburbs, for the green belt. So I'll hand out this diagram for you. If you don't have a diagram in your notes, here's a diagram of the city itself. And we'll be going through this diagram later on because we'll finish up by looking at the city itself, very end of this chapter. But we'll get to that next week. Oh, I did it again, Lester. I forget you every time. Every time. There we go. Here we got an extra. But look at that. One just for you. I knew it. There we go. Thank you. Okay, any other extras? There we go. All righty. So there's a little diagram of the city. Again, like I said, we'll be looking at this diagram again in detail when we get to the end of the chapter, but that will be next week. Yes. Yes, these gates are named after 12 tribes, yeah. Not all of them. We'll see there's some variation there. But Basically, that's named after the tribes. Okay, you see the green belt then? Here's the city itself. Here's the green belt all around it. Okay? Now, page 708, we come to food growing sections on either side of the city. And the measurements of the area for crops is in verse 18, first part of verse 18. The remainder of the length alongside the holy allotment shall be 10,000 toward the east and 10,000 toward the west, and it shall be alongside the holy allotment. So here we're talking about the rest of the area, and there'll be an area 10,000 reeds or 20 miles on the east, and an area 10,000 reeds or 20 miles on the west. So it's these rectangles here. And why will those exist? Point B in the middle of the page, last part of verse 18. And its produce shall be food for the workers of the city. So there we learn why these two areas exist on the either side of Jerusalem. It's a place for crops, for food growing. So we're going to have tomatoes and fruit trees and bananas and grain and wheat all in those areas. And you notice that Millennial River runs through those areas. How big do you think the tomatoes are going to be? They're going to be that big. They're going to be that big. Okay, you know, remember that river? That's a pretty powerful river, right? Brings life to the Dead Sea. How many of you guys have red thumbs? I have a red thumb. You know, plants die around me. How many of you have green thumbs? All right, you'll really like it there. You'll really like it up there. All righty. But this food, everything that grows in these areas will basically be for the people living in Jerusalem. It'll basically be their food supply. And I have a feeling that's because it's up on top of this plateau, the highest plateau on planet Earth. It'll be very convenient to have food up on top there. Now in verse 19, a look at the workers in this area. Verse 19, the workers of the city, out of all the tribes of Israel shall cultivate it. So drop down to point two, right parentheses A, top of page 709. We see that the people who live in the city will be from the 12 tribes. There'll be representatives from all the tribes in that city. So point B, right parentheses B, Jerusalem will therefore be the possession of the whole nation, not limited to just one tribe. Okay. Then the Millennial Mount Zion is again summarized in verse 20. The whole allotment shall be 25,000 by 25,000. You shall set apart the holy allotment, a square, with the property of the city. So again, we get the summary, a 50 by 50 mile Millennial Mount Zion, and it's important that the city sits in Millennial Mount Zion. Now, as we get to verses 21 and 22, we look at the allotment for the prince. And I'm going to keep you a little bit over, just a little bit to say about verses 21 and 22. Verse 21, the remainder shall be for the prince. On the one side and on the other of the holy allotment and of the property of the city in front of the 25,000 of the allotment toward the east border and westward in front of the 25,000 toward the west border alongside the portions shall be for the prince. And the holy allotment and the sanctuary of the house shall be in the middle of it, exclusive of the property of the Levites and the property of the city, which are in the middle of it, which belongs to the prince. Everything between the border of Judah and the border of Benjamin shall be for the prince. All right, turn over to page 710. I'm not going to say any much about page 710. I'm going to refer to only 3 points on page 710. I think it's pretty hard to figure out what's going on, so I'm just going to show you a diagram. I think that'll make it a lot easier. So page 710, point E at the top of the page, point E1. The portion for the prince is on the east and west side of the holy oblation. All right, let's look at the diagram. We've already looked at this diagram before. We have the prince's portion going to the Mediterranean and going to the eastern border, the wilderness there. Now let's take a look at a map. Now on this map, I've conjectured that the coastline will bulge out a little bit here in order to accommodate Millennial Mount Zion. Exactly what will happen over here, I don't know. There will be some topographical changes. We know the Dead Sea will be recognizable, but as you can see here, it's going to have to change somewhat to fit. So anyway, the prince's portion would then look something like that. It would be this portion to the west of the Holy Oblation to the Mediterranean Sea, and then this portion to the east. Now, that brings up the question, what about Ammon and Moab? Ammon is right in here. So Ammon would come totally under David's rule if Ammon is located there. Now, Moab is located from the top of the Dead Sea down to the bottom, this area here. So part of Moab would come under David's rule. Unless Ammon and Moab are reconstituted to the east of the border. We'll have to see exactly how that works out. All we know is that there will be an Ammon and Moab that are distinguishable in the kingdom. They may be under David's rule. We'll have to see what happens when we get there. Okay, does that make sense? All right. Now drop down to point four at the bottom of the page. We learn that Judah is the northern border of the Holy Oblation. So up on the screen here, Judah is the northern boundary. And then point B, Benjamin is the southern boundary. So up on the screen, here we have Benjamin as the southern boundary. And as we call it quits for tonight, we're now on page 711. We'll pick it up next week with our continued movement south with the remainder of the tribes. We'll see how they're all allotted the land. And then we'll focus in on Millennial Jerusalem. We'll see some details about Millennial Jerusalem. And we'll finish up Ezekiel next week, okay? I promise you that. I promise you that. I'm sure we'll get to the end of the book there. Okay? All make sense? Understandable? Okay, let me pray. Father, again, thank you for your word. And there's two applications I'd like to just highlight for this evening, Lord. Two takeaways. First of all, thinking of Reuben. Again, Reuben. He's honored with territory in the kingdom, but not the territory he could have had because he didn't leave a godly life. And the same is true for us. Once we're born again, we're born again. Our security, our eternal state is secure. But if we live a life of disobedience in this world, we'll lose out on the blessings. We'll lose out on the rewards we could have that could have been ours. So help us to remember Reuben. He lost out on his rewards through disobedience. And help us then, as we think about this, to learn to be content, as we've seen this evening. Godliness with contentment is great gain. So help us not to be eager to buy, sell, or trade away all that you've given us, but to lift it up before you as a gift from your hand. Whatever that may be, it may be our family, it may be our economic status, it may be the possessions we have, it may be the church we're part of. Help us, Lord, to learn to be content and to praise you for what you are doing in our lives, because we know that whatever you bring into our lives is for your glory and our good. And so we lift this these lessons up to you and ask you to help us to really make them part of our souls. And that'll bring great glory to you. And we thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. All righty, we'll see you guys next week.